College Football Nerds here talking Ohio State and Purdue, and we've probably got some new faces here, Josh, so we're going to give you some homework first, just out of the gate. Let us know in the comments what you think this score is going to be. I'm happy to reach out to some new Purdue fans, and also want to let y'all know that we do a live show every Saturday night. We did one this past Saturday night during the action of the evening, so it's kind of cool to hear us comment a little bit live. We also talk about everything that happened throughout the day. Had a lot of Ohio State talk in there, and they're just in our discussion about Nebraska, which Josh, Ohio State fans might be a little down on themselves after not really blowing Nebraska out, but really nobody has. And Purdue's coming off a big win. So let's get into this because I tweeted about it today. And Josh, I noted that, and this is something that I think on this channel we give a lot of credit for, and I want to give Purdue a lot of credit for it. And it kind of dovetails into this notion that Ohio State needs to know what they're up against and what they're coming into. Purdue right now is unranked. They've played two Power 5 teams out of conference, which I think they deserve a tremendous amount of credit for. One was a comfortable win against Oregon State, and one was a close game, closer than the score indicated, against Notre Dame. So a top 10-ish team that they scheduled out of conference. There's a lot of argument to be made that if they would have just not played Notre Dame and played some directional G5 or FCS, they'd be 72 right now and ranked about 12th or 13th. So that paired with something that kind of really bothers me, we've got Baylor and Oklahoma State, both of whom have not played any teams out of conference that are Power 5, and they're ranked up there because they've got three baked-in easy wins. And Baylor even has two losses. So, Josh, is it fair to say that this Purdue team, we need to not look at their AP ranking, but understand that if they would have just played one G5, maybe there would be a lot more respect on their name, and maybe Ohio State fans would really appreciate the game more going into it.
Yeah, I think so. And there's two levels to this, right? The first level is their ranking, and this is based off the AP poll. Look, we record before the playoff rankings come out. There's just not much we can do about that unless we want to record really late in the week. But yeah, I mean, Baylor has two losses. Baylor's losses were to ranked Oklahoma State by 10. Okay, sure, fine. And then a TCU team that's really not very good. They have wins over ranked BYU, ranked at the time Iowa State. Now, that hasn't held up to be a fantastic win. Iowa State is just not an elite team right now. But Purdue is first one out from the AP poll with losses to a Notre Dame team that is currently number 7, a Wisconsin team that is currently number 20, and then I guess their bad loss is to Minnesota, who's just not really unranked because they're bad as much as unranked because they're extremely inconsistent. But outside that, you know, Michigan State is a phenomenal win. That's a top 10 win, right? And you played Oregon State out of conference. And oh, by the way, you also beat Iowa, who's a top 20 team. That's a hard schedule with good wins on it where you've redeemed yourself well. You beat Nebraska. And I totally agree with you. I think if they just don't play Notre Dame, they're a ranked team right now. And I think they'd have a better resume than probably Baylor would if they had not played Notre Dame. But because they played that game and gave themselves the opportunity to lose to what is currently the number 7 team in the AP poll, they become an unranked team. And one thing that I think really drives me nuts, and this is the second point, and I think what you're also driving at, just because you're ranked unranked doesn't mean you're good or bad. Like, I totally buy people's argument for why, for example, Mississippi State should not be a ranked team. I got it last week. I get it this week. But Mississippi State and Purdue and a lot of these other teams are actually quite capable of playing high-level football and beating somebody. Now, there's some that, like Utah, might go in that category of they became unranked because they've kind of gotten disproven. I think Kentucky probably falls a little bit into that mold as well. You know, their better wins. One of them came against an LSU team that turns out is just massively inconsistent. But Purdue, from a quality perspective, they've kind of gotten bit by teams that are better than their ranking or able to play better than their ranking. And Purdue, I will also say, is a team that in terms of pure quality is a little better than a lot of the teams that are actually ranked. And so from Ohio State's perspective, I don't care that Purdue is ranked or unranked. Purdue is a pretty good team and somebody you should be concerned with.
Yeah, I mean, are we going to be more impressed if someone beats Louisiana, who has a three? They're ranked. They're 8-1. They have a 3-touchdown loss to Texas. Or who was it? Was it who lost to you? Somebody lost to Texas Tech by 17 points. Is another G5 that's currently ranked. So this is what's frustrating me about people looking at how many ranked wins you have. Well, if Ohio State wins this game, and I'm not saying they will, but if they do, they're not going to get credit for a ranked win. And I think that's silly. And it's a really arbitrary number or place that we're looking at in terms of quality. To get out of our way a little bit on this, you know, we've gone a little bit out of the way. Josh, you actually picked Purdue to beat Michigan State, and there's receipts because it was on a podcast, on Kelly Ford's podcast earlier this week. I want you to talk about kind of what you saw in that matchup. We both mentioned in the Michigan-Michigan State game that Michigan State secondary was suspect. Talk about what you saw in that matchup that led you to pick Purdue, and if you think that same kind of set of circumstances are present against Ohio State.
Yeah, so we didn't do a lot of stuff last week. We had some various things going on, stuff, you know, personal stuff going on that just kind of prevented us from doing this podcast. This is a sideshow, guys, for us, and we enjoy doing it as long as people enjoy listening, but very much not our day job. But I went on the Kelly Ford podcast, We Hate Your Team podcast, and you can watch us Twitter it at KFordRatings, and you can see the receipts that I picked Purdue outright to win the game. And look, if you followed our channel, you know we are a chalk-heavy channel because college football, by and large, is a chalk-heavy sport. I don't pick a lot of upsets. And if you look at that slate, I think you'll find I maybe might have been the only upset I think I picked last week. I picked North Carolina to beat Wake Forest, but I don't remember if they were actually an underdog. But there were significant problems in the Michigan State secondary that showed up against Michigan, and I think they showed up against Purdue. Purdue is almost a unique team in how they operate. They are, last I checked, dead last in the country in yard per carry, 2.39 yards per carry. It's truly atrocious, Frank, to be frank. But their passing game is reasonably good. So if you can throw, if you can throw on someone, especially throw on somebody that can't like buckle you down if you're one-dimensional, you can be pretty effective, or at least reasonably effective as Purdue. If you're playing a team where, you know, if you're one-dimensional, that they're really sound, especially I think Purdue, the biggest problem is the teams that are more of the zone drop eight mold. And the reason for that being those teams are usually really easy to run on because they have light fronts. But like Wisconsin fell into that mold where Wisconsin could play a really light front and handle them. And then that freed them up to do whatever the heck they wanted in terms of bringing pressure from different directions, in terms of dropping into whatever coverage they wanted to drop into. And it was really difficult for Purdue. Iowa was kind of a weird, different game, and it's funny to look at how those two went because they both have some similarities defensively, but I think just two different teams, and Michigan State was a tough matchup. Now, what does that mean for Ohio State? And I think that's really the more interesting conversation because Ohio State has been really up and down defensively. It seems like throughout the season, we've had people argue that they've turned a corner and become a great defense. They had that period where they were really stuffing people. Now, we were the first group to say, okay, but that's Akron, Rutgers, Maryland, and Indiana with a backup quarterback. How much improvement can you demonstrate? And Penn State was a team that can't run the ball very well this year, and they, by and large, shut down Penn State's passing game, 6.9 yards per attempt. Now, there's other stuff going on there with Clifford and where they've been at a passing game. But then they turn around with Nebraska, and they gave up 248 passing, about 8 yards per attempt. I think, personally, with Ohio State, they're a team that is probably not somebody you want to play if you're totally one-dimensional. I don't think you're going to have a lot of consistent production. But I do think Ohio State has enough gaffes in the secondary and enough issues, especially the linebackers and mid-level, in defending the passing game that you can have some success. So that's a long explanation, but do you agree with it? I mean, do you think there's a vulnerability? And if there is a vulnerability, is it something that can be exploited to the point of winning, or is it just something that can be exploited to the point of, you know, putting 20 points on the board?
And the thing I feel like, over even the last couple of years when Ohio State's defense hasn't been great up to their standard, they've got athletes all over the field. And when you have a super talented team, when you have a super talented defense, it's tough to be one-dimensional and be successful. It's when you face a team that's really lacking in those athletes, and you can deal with a team that's not out-athleting you, it's a lot easier, I feel like, to get a win and ride something and be able to exploit something where I don't know that we're going to see it with Ohio State. That's the concern for me too. Like, I like what I see a lot, especially last week being able to put 40 points up. That gives me some confidence in this Purdue offense. But I also wonder if it's going to be kind of like you said, what did we just see last week with Nebraska? Like, they might be able to hit a couple of big plays or a couple of drives and get enough points to make the game kind of interesting. But even with that game being a one-score game, I never felt like Ohio State was in that much danger. It was not the same thing as the LSU-Alabama game. Like, I never felt like Nebraska was going to have enough offense because they're – I don't even know what their dimension is. I don't know. Like, I don't want to say one-dimensional because they don't really have a great passing game or run game. So from that standpoint, I didn't really have that fear, and I feel like we might see that again against Purdue. Now, on the flip side, though, Purdue's got a sneaky good defense. And, Josh, when we talk about variability and randomness in a game where a team might have a low-key good defense, maybe not as good as Nebraska's, but a sneaky good defense, especially in the numbers, like in their national rankings, they rank really highly. Like, I think people see this 40 points they put up in Michigan State and think, oh, they're a high-flying, Wake Forest kind of offense, you know, or kind of team where you can outscore them. But so in a game, when we talk about variability and close scores, is this that kind of game where maybe the defense is what keeps Purdue in the game, and they have enough verticality, they have enough explosive stuff here or there to actually make this a game and find some offense where Nebraska couldn't?
It's an interesting question, and I think the easy conclusion is to say that, you know, Purdue's defense can give Ohio State some issues. Now, Ohio State against Nebraska, offensively, they were fine and not much more than that. And I say 26 points is actually a normally fine score, closing on 30. It feels really low these days, especially for this level of offense. But it was 7.5 yards per attempt. It was about 3 yards per carry as a team, but that was sack yardage. Henderson went for about 4.5 yards a carry, not 100 yards rushing. It was an okay performance against a defense that's been lauded as being pretty good. I'm not sure how much I totally buy it, but I think more than anything, it was just an inconsistent game. My concern with Purdue, if I actually am honest to the numbers and how they've done in various games, is that they've struggled with teams that have more modern RPO elements to them. And what I mean by that is, 9.5 yards per attempt against Minnesota, 9.3 to Nebraska, 9.2 to Michigan State. Teams that have modernized the offense have done fairly well. Now, Oregon State, Connecticut, Notre Dame, Illinois, Iowa, Wisconsin, they were really effective. But those are all teams that are much more traditional offensively. They haven't changed with the times, so to speak. I think when Purdue gets put in a position where you're having to play RPO, and RPO, the biggest thing that it does is it tends to force your guys to be on an island. Because the safeties can't really read run pass anymore, you've got to play usually more man coverage, and you've got to hold up in man coverage. Or you have to play a lot of zone, in which case you surrender a lot in the run game, but you make that sacrifice one way or the other. And it looks like in those games they've generally been in a lot worse spot, I think because of the way it isolates guys in coverage. And that to me is the concern, because if you've had those problems with Minnesota, with Nebraska, who isn't a great team, they can't actually be decent in the passing game, and they were only 48% passing, but they hit some big shots. And Michigan State, who is a modern offense, even if they're not necessarily phenomenal, and they had actually pretty good statistics in that game. Then Ohio State, with Olave, possibly Wilson, and all the different options they've got, that's a different animal. And to me, that's where this game breaks down. I don't know if you want to get into it, but I think the model does back me up on that.
Yeah, and we can get into the model. I will give you a little bit of pushback on Ohio State, and maybe you can – touch on this in the numbers, in that I think they had like 500 yards of offense against Nebraska. They had 600 something yards of offense against Oregon. So while, yeah, they have excellent first round wide receivers, they've got a good offensive line, they've got a good quarterback, great running back, they are having a hard time converting all of these yards into actual scoreboard production. And that's where a team like Oregon, who's not better than Ohio State, hangs around and beats you, because you aren't as efficient scoring. So that, you know, where against an inferior team, all that yardage is going to be converted into points. Those are end up being drives and wasted possessions that keep an inferior team in it. And I say inferior to Ohio State, not that Purdue is an inferior team in general. So I would like for you to kind of touch, when you talk about the model, touch on that scoring inefficiency that has plagued Ohio State a little bit, and then roll straight into your prediction based off of this, and we'll go from there.
So our model that's looking at these teams, building statistical profiles, and then building sort of unique scoring profiles, right? It gives a lot of weight to the level of competition that they've played and the way that they've been able to score in their production relative to the competition. And I say that because one of the intermediate statistics we generate is this percentage of opponent averages allowed. And Ohio State against the pass is 94% of opponent averages. Now the run, 76%, is really good. But when you look at Purdue and you look at Ohio State, these numbers in the mid-90s are very average. And when I say average, I mean for any P5 team, these are very average statistics. What my model sees is that Ohio State has played teams that average 7.2 yards per attempt. That's not good. 7.5 is competent. The average mean, and I mean mean Ohio State opponent, is not a competent passing attack. Nebraska is actually the highest per attempt team they've played at 9.2 yards per attempt. And Martinez went for 8 yards per attempt in that game. I mean, again, low completion percentage, but that is Nebraska's MO. They're kind of boom or bust. So even in that game, it does support the fact that defensively, Ohio State is not really reducing opposing passing offenses by all that much. On the offensive side of the ball, the interesting thing is Ohio State's numbers are crazy. 5.7 yards per carry, 10 yards per attempt, about double the per carry average of Purdue, more than double actually, and a good, you know, third bigger on the pass. College football is a weird game because you've got these break points and stall points, right? When you get to a certain point, if you're bad enough, your offense shuts down completely, right? You don't have your production. You don't go from 20 points to 10. You go from 20 to 0. And if you're good enough, the production will start skyrocketing. You go from 20 points to 40 points and 50 points. Because you go, you know, like, let's say yard per attempt averages, right? From 8 yards per attempt down to 6, we'll go from a good passing attack to one that is almost non-functional. And then 8 yards per attempt to 10 goes from a good passing attack to one that is explosive and putting up 50 points in a game. That it's just, you know, a little 2-yard sling one way or the other. But the game, because it's a game about getting 10 yards at a time, is really dependent upon those little narrow margins. And people really play within those margins. And for Ohio State, you see that in the way that they get their production. The Oregon game you're pointing out, that was 7.2 yards per play. That's a lot. Average Ohio State snap went for 7 yards, and they had 28 points. And there have been games that have been similar to that one way or another, but in large part, when they have really high scoring, they need about 8 yards a play. It was about 8.5 yards per play against Rutgers and Maryland. Akron was over 10 yards per play, as was Minnesota. Now, those are defenses that turn out to be pretty crummy. But when the last couple weeks, they were at 6.8 yards per play, about 5.9 yards per play against Penn State and Nebraska, they're held to 26 and 33. And I mention that because let's take the Penn State-Ohio State game and the Purdue-Michigan State game in perspective. Against Penn State, Ohio State was 6.85 yards per play, score 33 points. Against Nebraska, Michigan State, Purdue was 6.99 yards per play, about a tenth of a yard per play difference. And you saw a full touchdown more for Purdue than you saw for Ohio State. And that's one of the big things that's baked into the numbers. This game has a massive yardage advantage for Ohio State, 7.7 yards per play to 4.8. My model does not think that it's close in yardage, but the score 40-19 isn't totally out of whack. And I would say I would probably interpret that as being more something that Ohio State puts away late. So to my point earlier about where Ohio State's end and bend but don't break, and like, are they bad enough to be exploited to lose? I think they're bad enough to be, I say bad enough, right? They're average enough statistically that our model thinks, yeah, Purdue can put up 20, but not more than 20. They're not bad. They're not poor. They're good against the run. It doesn't actually kind of funnily, doesn't even matter against Purdue. They can't run if you're good or not. So that advantage is kind of irrelevant. It's just the pass defense. But the biggest key here is that Purdue's defense is solid enough, but it's not fantastic. My model sees the RPO problem I'm talking about, and that's why it gives Ohio State 40. It just doesn't think Purdue can score enough to stay in this, and that Ohio State's able to move away. I will go ahead and roll into my prediction because you wanted me to monologue, and that's your own fault. I personally think Ohio State's going to win this game, and I think they're going to win it by a pretty considerable margin. I will say 41-17. And to me, the biggest problem is if Ohio State knows that you are a team that cannot run the ball, they've got some guys like JTT that they can set loose and they can be aggressive and they can get after the quarterback and make your life really miserable. And Purdue, their defense has been particularly bad against these RPO concepts. So I think Ohio State's offense is going to be very successful. As much as we started to trump this game up in terms of where Purdue should be, this is the opposite of the Michigan State game, in my view. This is a bad matchup for Purdue, and I think it's going to be worse maybe than even the quality differential between these two teams, and I think Ohio State wins it by a pretty significant margin. I'm going to look up, while you give your prediction, what the betting line is, because I don't even know as I make that prediction.
It opened at Ohio State laying 19. I think it moved to 20.
Okay, so our model is at 20. It's funny, somebody accused us of using the betting line to make our model. I don't know how to prove it, but I swear we don't. I swear my pick's not based on it. I had no idea the line was 20. I actually figured it'd be lower, but it's exactly in line with everything I just said.
So I think that I'm going to disagree with you a little bit. We don't disagree a whole lot on our picks. I'm not picking Purdue in this game, but I think it's going to be closer. I think with O'Connell that they've found something offensively that, you know, early in the season, we talk about recency bias not being baked into the model by design, but sometimes the model has a blind spot where it can't see momentum and it can't see any significant shifts offensively or defensively that make a change for the better. Ohio State fans will tell you that they made a change at, you know, who's calling the plays on defense, and it's changed them defensively for the good. They've made some things, CJ Stroud's shoulder and some other things, and their offense is better for the good. And it's, you know, they always tell us that. And I don't think it's totally unfair. I don't know that they struggle as much. So if you look at, like, the yards per play in Nebraska, Nebraska's put up good yards per attempt passing numbers all year. They did it against Oklahoma. I think they threw for over 9 yards an attempt. They did it. They had a much better, I think they had a 2 yard better clip against Ohio State. At one point, they were throwing for like 11 yards per attempt and had no points. And like they were just completely useless offensively. So I think that something weird in those numbers, and maybe it is the inefficiency thing in the RPO game in general, kind of throws things out of whack. And so I think the scoring inefficiencies are going to hold clear here again in this game, and it's going to give Purdue a puncher's chance, but they're going to fall short. I've got Ohio State 37, Purdue 24. Still a fairly comfortable win for Ohio State, but not covering. And it's funny because the takeaway from this game is going to be that Purdue's a four-loss team. Yeah, Ohio State beat a four-loss team. Not realizing that I would give Ohio State, and this is a question I have for you, I would give Ohio State more credit for beating Purdue than I would probably half of the top 25 right now. What do you think?
Yeah. Wait, say that again for me.
I was saying that Purdue's going to have four losses coming out of this game if they lose this game. and it's going to be downplayed. The accomplishment for Ohio State is going to be downplayed. And I would argue that beating Purdue, given their momentum and given how they've played and who they've beaten and how – I mean, they beat the crap out of Iowa. I would give Ohio State – if they win this 37-24 or your score 41-17, I'd give them more credit for that win over a four-loss Purdue than half of the teams that they could get a ranked win against in the top 25.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say half, but probably a good 10 of them. Like I think Purdue might well be better than the UTSA that's 15th in the AP poll. They might be better than NC State. They're probably better than Coastal Carolina, Louisiana. Yeah, I think there's a pretty good argument for all those things. We already talked about like Baylor and Oklahoma State, Houston. So I do agree with you that there are a lot of ranked teams that probably aren't as good as Purdue. And again, right, you don't play a team's record, you play the team. And it doesn't matter if you've got a team like, you know, this is the problem that Alabama ran into last week, right? You know, LSU is a team that's been in implosion mode off and on and lost some really stupid games. Minnesota's that way in the Big Ten, right? Minnesota's lost some stupid games. That doesn't make Minnesota bad. And Minnesota doesn't, you're not going to play the team that lost to Bowling Green. You're going to play the team that shows up because you're, you know, Ohio State. And that's the struggle. And Purdue, I think, falls into that realm as a team that's actually quite dangerous. It's just more of the schedule and the way the schedule's played out and their losses that has made them unranked, much more so than it is the fact that they're a, you know, they're a, quote, bad team because they're an unranked team. I think that's really short-sighted and a shallow view of the sport.
All right, y'all, that's it for us. Give us your scores in the comments. And again, if you like this, we talk for 2 hours. It's actually better content, I think, than the previews because we're the only college football channel on YouTube that actually are just taking questions live. We're just interacting with the chat, and we have a great chat. And we're just taking questions on the fly and talking about games as they happen. So you might enjoy that. We'll have a podcast link because it's 2 hours long. You may not want to watch us for 2 hours on YouTube, but you can listen to it in your commute. So we'll have links to all that in the description. You can check it out. Also, hit that subscribe button if you haven't yet already. Purdue fans, if you're new, do it. Ohio State fans, you've been around long enough. Y'all need to hit that subscribe button and get off the fence. I know we're a couple of Southern guys, but we love your team. Thanks so much, y'all. Have a great week. And God bless.